Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a little bit of pressure on gold. It was up earlier in the day. Everything is just, you know, just status quo. Everything is just holding its own, little fluctuations here and there, but certainly opens stronger in the morning, but closes weaker throughout the day. So we're looking at gold at down a little over a buck at $1,338. Silver down 5 pennies at $18.93. Platinum was up a dollar at $11.09, and palladium was up 5 at $7.02. The U.S. dollar had, the DX had, you know, a little pressure on earlier in the day, still fluctuating, 94.53. Crude oil was up 0.62 at 48.03. And the paper markets today, let me bring that up here. They have the Dow up 18 at 18,547. The NASDAQ was up 15 at 5260. And the S&P 2186 up 4. 10-year yield moved a point, 0.01 at 1.55%. And the euro, a little pressure at 113. European markets, you know, traded pretty much the same as ours. Not a lot of action. So they're holding their highs. And, you know, it's an interesting market. And I saw two reports today. If I can bring them up today, I'm not going to go through the report, but there was both Citibank, Bank of America, gave reasons why there's the markets are distorted. The Bank of America gave 10 reasons why they think that the U.S. stocks have an elevated risk of correction. And Citi had 6 ways the central banks have distorted markets. So it's interesting that it came out the same day that you had both of these little reports. And, you know, there was, you know, certainly both reports had items that we talk about on this program all the time. And, again, it's just another sign that these markets, I don't think they're headed much higher. And they certainly have more downside potential than up. And coming into September is always the weakest month of the year for stocks. And so we'll have to see with the election and everything else coming along, will it pick up some downside momentum come September, and will it carry through the election and the first of next year? Will it need a catalyst? Are these distortions that they have chosen any type of surprise? But I mean, just a couple of the headlines that was it Citibank chose was, you know, just, or I should say Citigroup, was just some economic surprises, the valuations, you know, with a, you know, none of them are meeting their expectations. They changed the expectations so they can meet them, and that's been going on for years and years and years. You have China as an outside, the world's second economist. They look to be heading for another rough patch. I believe it was last week their manufacturing PMI dipped back below 50, which points to a correction. You know, the credit and leverage, I mean, there isn't anything good to support anything to see these markets go higher. And again, we know the amount of money that has been funneled into buybacks from corporations just to keep their shares high, just to keep their prices high. And that's what's keeping these numbers where they're at. And it truly is amazing now that the markets even function.
Well, I don't know. If you put enough money in it, it's like corn going through a goose or something like that. You keep feeding it, it'll come. It'll go through. Because people want the currency if they can lay hands on it. But you know what occurs to me when you're talking about it? These expectations, they are of the future. We expect something's going to happen a week from now, a month from now, a year from now. Expectations necessarily go into the future. It seems to me that we should be making investments based on what has a corporation or a particular corporation, what have they done? What did they do in the last quarter? We should be looking at what did they really do, and that's the way we should be making our investments. I know everyone invests because they think something's going to be worth more in the future. There's a built-in expectation in all of this, but maybe there's a question of balance on this. And it's as if the expectations have taken on a life of their own. They are like derivatives. The stock is worth, how much did it earn? Right? What were its earnings? What have its earnings been? The stock should be reflecting a little more past performance and, to my mind, less future potential. And when we get into that future potential, we're kind of talking about a derivative in a sense. That's not necessarily true, but you know, it's an interesting metaphor from my perspective. And if we're going to look into the future, and we have to with our investments, everybody does it. You can't get away from it. But insofar as your investments are based on your perception of the future, I'm sure that silver is going to $25 an ounce. Okay, that's your bet on the future. I'm sure gold is going to $2,000. Okay, there's your bet on the future. And the same thing with different stocks you want to point to. But insofar as we're peering into the future and investing according to future expectations, what we're really doing is we're placing a bet. It's like they're going to spin the roulette wheel, and I'm betting that it's going to come on number 7. All right, I'm betting into the future. We always do that, but there's a question of balance, and I have the impression that maybe we're too much future-oriented, and we should be looking, what has it done lately? They can't get away from the expectations, but maybe we shouldn't be so controlled by them, so influenced by them. And what really aggravates me about expectations is the news media and the markets, they make a big deal out of whether a particular stock met its expectations. I don't know. Is that a valid reason to buy and sell? I suppose it is, but it's still future performance, expectations, betting.
My expectations.
Look at what's happened. Look at what's happened and look at the fundamentals that have been there for the past. Make your investments accordingly. And from my perspective, maybe that would be a better solution. Maybe not. I don't know. But this way it looks.
Expectations help influence psychology of the thinking,
oh,
and get people to buy. But yeah, the markets, the fundamentals, there are no fundamentals on anymore underneath any of these paper markets. The fundamentals were changed to central bank planning, central bank stimulus, multinational corporations, rigging of their shares, insider trading, all these, there are no, my fundamentals really, I don't think matter anymore. I'm probably the only one that talks about the fundamentals of gold and silver. Everybody else is, because it's not exciting. Fundamentals don't sell, doesn't sell, even though that's what you should buy on. Because that's the truth. Fundamentals, is the truth of any investment that you go into. And yet it is so much ignored. And of course, as I mentioned, they have been replaced by the Federal Reserve, every central bank around the world. And of course, how much confidence can you have in these markets? But yet that's where, how much of your money, your retirement money is sitting there. Based on nothing. It's just, what were you going to say, Al?
I don't recall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
something about a parallel between casinos. Oh, yeah. The idea that fundamentals are dull. That's what was going through my mind. People don't want the fundamentals per se because there's not enough action in the fundamentals.
No action.
All right? You go to the casino in Las Vegas and you're betting on the roulette wheel or the crap table or whatever. There's lots of action.
Yeah, who's
it's exciting.
Hollering?
It's exciting. But what are the fundamentals? What are the fundamentals of, what's the fundamental of the roulette wheel, Melody? You know?
You tell me.
The house wins.
Yes.
Oh, who wants to do that? Who wants to look and say, wait a second.
The house.
You mean the house is mostly going to win on the roulette wheel?
You're going to steal my money?
Yeah. Odds are I'm going to lose money here. That's the fundamental.
Yep.
That doesn't attract any attention. That's not exciting. There's no action in that. So, oh, what a spoil sport, telling us we're probably going to lose our money when we go to the casino. That's the fundamental. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the fundamental. I want to get in the action. I want to take a shot. I want to roll seven consecutive rolls and watch my, $500 bloom up, jump up to where there's 50,000 or whatever.
I'll tell you what.
That's part of the human nature on this thing, but the fundamentals, they're right, they're dull.
But if you look at the true fundamentals of gold and silver, it's going to have a lot of action, which is just quiet now. The storm is building. But are you kidding me? The predictions, and I predict it to be much higher. No one can guarantee the prices, but if you look at the history of gold and you look at the fundamentals of gold, gold is going to skyrocket along with silver. And we just live in a very strange world, which those fundamentals don't apply.
They always apply, but they're not.
They will.
Aren't paying attention to them. They don't.
Not paying attention.
They don't excite
people. And people should. I mean, if you're trying to save your hard-earned money, isn't that what you want, though? But
yeah, if you're trying to save. But what if you are trying to increase your hard-earned money?
Well, hey,
what
the
if
world
you're
that
on
we
the,
live
what
in?
If you're in desperation, in desperate straits, and you think I've got to have more money now? That means I got to go to the 7-Eleven and take out another Powerball or a lottery ticket. I've got to get to the roulette wheel and I'm going to bet everything I got on 0-0, right? Because I got to have it now. There is a point where people who are desperate and they're in desperate financial circumstances, they are perhaps more prone to gamble what little they have left in hopes of making a killing.
And if people,
well, you take
so
somebody
desperate.
Who's solid, got pretty good, you're pretty good shape, you're not so likely to go out there and be gambling. You're more likely to take a longer term view. I don't need to make a fortune today on this roll of the dice. I'm not. My future does not depend on this one roll of the dice. And so I can afford to look at fundamentals that will carry me on into the future in a way that one roll of the dice will not.
Well, the U.S. Federal Reserve thinks that they can take us into the future. But, you know, they have their meeting this weekend in Jackson Hole, their annual symposium, and at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And what was interesting, there was an article by Reuters, and the article is about how the Federal Reserve is under increasing pressure to reform their own system and goals to better reflect the diversity of America and its incomes. I'm thinking, really? But the article is on, and it talks about there is an extra meeting on Thursday. And there's this group. They really don't talk. U.S. policymakers will confer not only with their counterparts from around the world, but also host a meeting on Thursday with a group calling for a radical overhaul of the Fed. Fed Up is this group. It's a network of community organizations and labor unions that wants a more diverse, transparent, and income inequality-aware central bank. They're going to meet with the Kansas City Fed President, Esther George. And then there's three other Fed policymakers, New York's William Dudley, Cleveland's Loretta Mester, and Boston's Eric Rosengren is also scheduled to show up. But here what I thought was interesting, too, these activists are going to look to build on their proposals put forward in conjunction with former top Fed advisor Andrew Levin to make the Fed's 12 regional banks government entities. The Fed is the only world's major central bank that is not fully public. I thought that was interesting. Then it goes on, and then the article goes on and talks about, you know, how this group wants to push the Fed's agenda enforcing racial, gender, and income equality. And it's like, okay, whatever. But I thought that one statement about making the 12 regional banks government entities, I thought was interesting.
Do you think they'll do that?
No.
Do you think the government wants to do that?
I don't know.
Do you think the government wants to do that?
Well, I don't know.
I don't think it does.
Because
this is a situation, as long as they control the Fed, but they're not actually part of the Fed, they have great control over the Fed. They can essentially say, look, we need to sell some of these bonds, and you need to buy them. All right? The Fed's, but we don't want any more of your bonds. We don't care. Buy my bonds. But you're never going to pay the bonds back. We don't care. Buy the bonds. And the Fed does. Now, they couldn't do that. I don't think they could run the same racket selling their bonds. If they couldn't sell their bonds to the Fed, if the Fed was a government agency, excuse me, how would the government sell its own bonds to the government? They have to have this illusion of private. The one is a private entity. The other one's a government entity. The government sells its bonds to a private entity. And that kind of makes this kosher. Where if the Federal Reserve was all a government entity, it would be like selling government bonds to the Department of Defense or, you know, the Obamacare or whatever. It just doesn't work. They've got to have that illusion of separation, privacy versus government.
Yeah, but you know what? You could read into a lot of this. If you have 12 regional banks, I mean, that become government entities, you could say, well, you'd have each of these 12 areas, these entities, these 12 regional banks work more with the states. I mean, you talk about zoning, you know, there's been discussions for years about how the United States is going to be broken up into regional areas. I mean, you could really take this to, you know, thinking, well, what are they thinking? You know, maybe there is something to it, for, you know, much further in the future. Or is this the way? And if Donald Trump gets elected, you know, he has mentioned, you know, getting the Fed, you know, audit the Fed, that's going to grow some legs. So, you know, I don't know. It's you could.
The Fed's under a lot of stress, but there are people who think we can dump enough debt into the Federal Reserve. It's a private entity. If the Federal Reserve were actually dissolved,
debt
would disappear.
That's
right off the debt. They may be using the Federal Reserve like an ash can. and saying, here, we buy all our debt, and then,
absolutely,
oh, dear, they went bankrupt. Well, now we don't have to pay that debt. I mean, the Fed does seem to be vulnerable right now. A lot of public flack, a lot of people are upset with it, and it's vulnerable, so who knows? You know, is the Fed going to be here 5 years from now?
And when I can't even imagine why they want to force diversity in the Fed, I mean, but anyway, we got to take a break.
Do we have to? I guess so. All right, folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to go into the U.S. Mint to see the number for the Silver Eagles once again. And I'm pleasantly surprised, since they took the allotments off from the dealers, they had a nice week of trading. I mean, for all week, it was basically at a little over 500, but they do make the new sales as a Monday.
500,000.
500,000, yes.
Yeah.
And they're now at a little over a million. So they had a nice trading day yesterday for the month so far. Yeah. Still a bad month. It's one of the lowest months that I've seen in, you know, well, July was 1.3. So we should beat that. I would like to think we will beat last month, but I'll tell you what, it was a little touch and go. But you had a little bit of a drop in silver price, so people are going in there and taking advantage of the lower price. Gold Eagles seem to be doing okay. They've already beaten the last month, even though there was 38,000 in July, which is the same as March. You know, so it's really a slow. 38,000 is not a lot. And right now we're currently at 41.5. So So things seem to be looking up in the sales, but we need those numbers to move back up to help support the prices of gold and silver at these levels. So,
well, it's a little bit of what fools these mortals be. Prices are reasonable or even a little bit down. Should be jumping on them, and yet people are. What are they doing with their money, Melody?
You know what?
It's all about the stock market?
I think so. Yeah. I think you have all these highs that people are looking for the most return on their dollars. There's dividends that are being paid. They're looking for the biggest yield. And, of course, with the biggest, highest yields come the greater risk. But that doesn't seem to be pushing the stocks any higher than what they are. And there's a lot of, I think that the gold market, and I'm not whining. I always try to understand what influence is, impacting a certain area, a certain market. And I do believe, and I'm just not ragging on analysts and the way something is promoted and so forth. I truly believe people are confused by a lot of the internet writings about gold and silver. They've been told for years, of recent years, the COMEX is going to default because there's not enough product. And yes, I get the number of contracts versus the amount of physical gold and silver. I get all that. But they've been doing that for a long time, and I think it's not. And so I think a lot of this distorted information about gold and silver, of why you buy it, and I guess it's some of that what we talked about in the first segment of the program. It's not exciting. The fundamentals aren't exciting.
Well, the fundamentals aren't exciting.
But
yeah.
Hey, if you're expecting the COMEX to collapse, that's a little more, hey, yeah. It's a lot of that rah-rah, which I think has hurt the market more than helped it. We have another event coming up at the end of September. So people are being focused on that. And I think the gold and silver investors have been taken through this annual predictions of the world falling apart. Instead of focusing on how you're losing your purchasing power with owning fiat currencies, and why, and instead of sticking, and you can make that exciting. I mean, hey, let's go to Venezuela and see what happens. Let's revisit Zimbabwe and see what happens. Let's revisit, Argentina. Let's revisit so many countries. If you find that exciting and to make you buy gold and silver, well, we'll do that. But I think people are missing the boat. They're missing what is important about gold and silver, and they're getting caught up in all these promises of quick gains instead of a longer-term gain, which I believe you will have with gold and silver.
There's another point also. There's an article here from 24H Gold, and the title of the article is, "What Did J.P. Morgan Mean?" And I'm just going to read from some of the article here. It says, "The following exchange occurred on December 18th, 1912. J.P. Morgan, the most influential American financier and banker of his time, was called to testify before Congress. Samuel Untermeyer was chief counsel of the Pujo subcommittee of the House Committee on Banking and Currency, which was formed to investigate the influence of Wall Street bankers and financiers over the nation's money and credit. He was attempting, that's just Mr. Samuel Untermeyer, he was attempting to determine whether a money trust that controlled American business and finance existed, and if Mr. Morgan, J.P. Morgan, of course, was part of it." So here are a couple excerpts. Here are excerpts from some of the questions and answers during the course of this congressional testimony. And Mr. Untermyer says, I want to ask you a few questions bearing on the subject that you've touched upon this morning as to the control of money. The control of credit involves a control of money, does it not? And Morgan replies, a control of credit? No. Mr. Untermyer, but the basis of banking is credit, is it not? Mr. Morgan, not always. That credit is an evidence of banking, but credit is not the money itself. Money is gold and nothing else. Understand? This is a little over 100 years ago. This is 1912. And J.P. Morgan, biggest financier of his day, he's saying money is gold and nothing else. It goes on and says above exchange is just a small part of more than 3 hours of testimony by Mr. Morgan. But it's the most revealing part of the discussion about money. It hits upon a point not often understood today, as Mr. Morgan put it so precisely, money is gold, all right, and nothing else. Now, they go on in this article and explain that this is something that surprises most people. We think of paper dollars and maybe even plastic credit cards and whatever. We think of that as money. But J.P. Morgan, he understood clearly that money is not just paper dollars. It's certainly not credit. Money is gold. And if people could understand this the same way J.P. Morgan did, and it doesn't take that much intelligence to understand this, but it does take, it's foreign to what we've been conditioned to believe. We've been conditioned to believe that a $100 bill is money. It's not, it's currency. Right? The word money means something. And if you want more money, it is incumbent on you to learn what money really is and what it's been for the past several thousand years. And from people like J.P. Morgan, what we're learning and what we understand is that money is gold. That's what it is. And the rest of it is currency. And perhaps that, and that may even be true of silver, although a lot of people would object to that. But money is the primary, or excuse me, gold is the primary money of the world. And if people understood that fundamental, there'd be a lot of people who say, you know, maybe I don't need a stack of $100 bills. Maybe what I really need is a stack of 1 ounce gold coins. If you want money, understand what money is and get some. It's available. You can get it. It's not currency, but it's money, and there's a difference. Well, and he points out Morgan was defining more than just money. He was revealing the essential nature of the process by which people are paid for their labor, which in turn is the backbone of our capitalist society. Money comes from the market process, not from government. Now, there's a big and important point. When the government, and working in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, passes out these little green slips of paper and tells you this is money, it gives the government enormous power. It was Rothschild, Meyer Amschel Rothschild, who made the point. He didn't, and this goes back, I think, even into the 1800s. He said, I don't care who makes the laws as long as I can control the money supply. I don't care. Let the government go play its games and make laws. I mean, it means nothing to me as long as I can control the money. Government has learned from Baron Rothschild, and they said, we need to be able to make the money, and or the currency at least, and fool the people into accepting currency as if it were money. And that's the only way they can make it. They can't make money. The government can't make money. Money is gold. It requires somebody to get a pick and a shovel and go dig a hole in the ground and extract some minerals out and refine them. Government doesn't do that. Government isn't interested in doing that work. But what government can do is print. They don't want to invest any labor in finding gold and saying, well, look, we've got some money here. They'd rather just sign a piece of paper and print more little pieces of paper. There's a little bit of work involved, but next to nothing. I mean, you can buy a $100 bill. I think the cost of making a $100 bill is less than a nickel. All right? It's not like digging gold out of the ground. Well, government wants that position where they can make currency, and that requires this fiat currency, debt-based monetary system. And Mr. J.P. Morgan, he's saying, look, money comes from the market process. Money is a result of people getting their burro and getting their pan and their pick and their shovel, and they go out into the desert. They start prospecting to look to see if they can find some money, gold. All right, today it's a far more complex process, but the point is money is made from labor. It's not made by just making promises and printing pieces of paper or issuing digits on a hard drive. Money is something that is made with sweat and blood of people who work for a living. And the government, it's made by the market. It's not made by the government. And the point is, if you're getting a, if you're getting something that looks like money, but it's ultimately coming from the government, you're not getting money. You're getting currency. And I know how hard it is to communicate the difference. The average person says, well, what difference does it make? I can get... What difference if I go out and buy something with a stack of $100 bills or I buy something with a gold coin? What difference does it make? Well, it actually does make a lot of difference because you don't buy anything, believe it or not, with your pieces of paper. You purchase items with your Federal Reserve notes, your fiat currencies. You can make purchases. You don't really buy anything with the Federal Reserve notes. You make purchases. Why? It's complex and involves the law, and it's hard to explain, but what it comes down to is gold coins carry intrinsic legal and equitable titles. And when you buy something with a gold coin, you are entitled to both illegal, legal, and equitable title to whatever product you have purchased, you've bought. When you go out with a Federal Reserve note, who owns the Federal Reserve note? And the answer is the Federal Reserve still holds legal title to the note because it's been loaned into circulation. You only have equitable title. You only get equitable title to your property. It's part of the reason why some people are concerned about seizure laws. You don't have a legal right to stop the seizure laws. You only have equitable title because you purchased it. You purchased the car, the house, the land, whatever. You purchased it with these green pieces of paper. And legal title belongs to the Federal Reserve. Legal title, therefore, to whatever was purchased with that green piece of paper belongs to the Federal Reserve. You have a bifurcated title. You get equitable title. You get the right to use it. You get the right to push it around and possess it. But you don't have the right of disposal. That goes to whoever holds legal title. It goes to the difference. Legal title is the essential element if you're going to a court of law. If you're not contesting legal title, you don't have standing at law. The purpose of a court of law is to determine legal rights. Legal rights flow from legal title. If you don't have it, you're not going to a court of law. You may think you're going to a court of equity. Equity, under equity, the court can rule any way he wants. If he doesn't like the color of your eyes, he can rule against you, the judge. He's not bound by the law. He can pay attention to it. He can go along with it if he wants to, but he's not bound by it. He has enormous discretion in courts of equity. This is why we hear reports of judges making law and judges coming to decisions that seem irrational and bizarre. How's that happen? It happens because he can do that in a court of equity. He can't do it in a court of law, at least not legally. He can do it legally in a court of equity. And I know this is confusing and it's hard for people to follow, but I'm trying to get the idea across that whether you use pieces of paper or digital currency or you use tangible, physical, real money like gold or silver, makes a difference to what rights you have to the property you have purchased with one or bought with the other. You are less free as long as you're using those green pieces of paper. And I'm sure most people hearing this, if you've never heard any of this before, you go, oh, that's crazy talk. No, it's not. Not crazy talk. This is important. It's part of the way that they can push you around. Why do you have to? Why do you suppose a police officer can pull you over when you're driving your car and you don't have your seatbelt fastened? Why can they pull you over and give you a ticket if the taillight is out? Why? Because it's not your car. You have equitable title to the car. You have the right to drive it and possess it and put gas in it, whatever. You know, cruise around town in your car. Yeah, that's equitable title. But you don't really own it. You don't have a legal title to the car, and they can give you a ticket. Why? What difference does it make to the government if I have a bad taillight on my car? If I've got title to that car, both legal and equitable, it's none of the government's business. The government gives us the tickets because we're driving a car whose legal title is in possession of the Department of Transportation or whoever.
We need to go to break, Al.
All right, we'll do that. But just the point is, there's a difference between money and currency, and it's not just the color or the, you know, gold, metal, or paper. There's important legal differences. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstone. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to continue with the special we held yesterday. We announced yesterday we have a 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle and $20 face value of 90% silver. The coinage that was minted up and including 1964, the quarters and dimes that were made out of silver, that had silver in their in each coin. So we're going to have $20 face value of 90% silver, 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle, includes your shipping and insurance for $1,040. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs. They are archived Monday through Friday.
An article here from Phoenix Capital Investments. And the headline is Proof Positive that the Recovery is a Myth. All right, now, this is not necessarily proof positive. headline may be exaggerating the truth a little bit, but there is evidence, and it's good evidence. Right? And what they point out, the article says, all claims of U.S. economic recovery are lies. We now have definitive evidence in the form of tax receipts. The federal unemployment tax is also known as the FUTA, the FUTA tax, federal unemployment tax, is levied at 6% of the first $7,000 of an employee's wage. That's $7,000 a year. You have to suppose that most employees would be at least making $7,000 a year. I mean, what kind of a job do you have that doesn't pay you at least $7,000? There may be some, but you have to assume 6% of the first $7,000, just about everybody who had a job should be paying that toward government. If you made $20,000, you still pay 6% of the first $7,000. If you made $20 million, you're still paying 6% of the first $7,000. So this is the federal unemployment tax, also known as the FUTA tax, F-U-T-A. And according to the Office of Management and Budget, receipts for the FUTA tax have not only been falling steadily since 2012, but are also moving counter to the growing number of people employed. Governments come out and they're saying, oh, we've got 255,000 people were employed, received jobs in July, new employees, 255,000. Okay, that should be 255,000 who are generating ultimately their FUTA tax that on an annual rate is 6% of per 7,000. Right? This should be increasing the amount. If we're getting more jobs, we should have more FUTA tax being paid to the government. If the economy was indeed creating jobs, these new jobs should at least be generating $7,000 a year. If the government and or the economy is steadily creating, say, 255,000 more jobs in the month of July, FUTA tax should be rising. However, in 2012, FUTA receipts were $66.6 billion. In 2013, these receipts fell to $56.8 billion. In 2014, they were down to $54.9 billion. In 2015, they dropped to $51.8 billion. FUTA taxes have been falling since 2012. And that's evidence that there's a problem here. There are two unpleasant answers. There's a question here. Unemployment numbers. Why have FUTA tax receipts been steadily falling since 2012, particularly when the unemployment number is supposedly below 5% and job growth is great? There are two unpleasant answers. Either one, the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers are mistaken. They tell us, oh, unemployment is only 4.67%, whatever. Maybe that's not true. Maybe there's a lot more people who aren't working than the Bureau of Labor Statistics leads us to believe. Maybe they didn't create. They claimed to create 255,000 jobs in July. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't create the jobs, right? So the first explanation for why have FUTA receipts been steadily falling since 2012 is that the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers are mistaken and or intentionally falsified. And the second explanation is that the quality of new jobs created may be very poor. And by quality, they mean how much are you paying? How many of these 255,000 jobs created in July are paying $5 an hour? How many are paying $25 an hour? If you're only getting $5 an hour or whatever the minimum wage is, then you may not be, and especially if you're only working part-time, you're not going to be contributing much in the form of this FUTA tax. Both answers are probably true. In other words, the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers are mistaken or falsified, and the quality of new jobs is low. Both answers are probably true. However, the second response, that the quality and therefore the pay for newly created jobs must be very poor. This article thinks that's the most credible answer. The predominant problem is a combination of an increase in the proportion of part-time workers and full-time jobs that provide lower compensation. In simple terms, jobs that are being created are predominantly low-paying. The significant job growth has not come back to the United States. There has not been a real recovery. Yes, we have more people working, but they're working at lower wages than they might have paid back 10 years ago. All right, 10 years ago, they might have had $15. Today, they're getting whatever the minimum wage is. I don't even know what the minimum wage is, but let's, for the sake of argument, they're being paid $5 an hour. Huh? Yeah, they got a job, but what are they going to do with it? Again, the jobs that are being created are predominantly low-paying. Thus, significant job growth has not come back to the United States. The economic recovery narrative is a myth. The unemployment number has become a political propaganda tool used to conceal the United States economic realities. If the truth is that despite government claims, there's been no recovery and FUTA tax revenues have been steadily falling for the past 4 years, what are we most likely to see in the next months or years? A real economic recovery? Are we finally going to get to a recovery now? Or are we more likely to see an economic recession, maybe a depression? Which is more likely? The point of this article is that these tax revenue numbers, well, we cannot count necessarily on getting a straight answer as to the unemployment or the inflation numbers. The tax revenue numbers probably aren't cooked, at least not very much. And if we look at the FUTA tax, it indicates there's been no recovery for the past 4 years. In fact, collectively, the American people are making less money. That means no recovery. That means that's arguably, you know, we've said on this program for several years, they talk about a recovery. I'm just saying, what recovery? I don't see a recovery. If we don't really have a recovery, what do we have? We either have stagflation, or maybe we have a slow-moving recession that's bringing us down, and how far are we going to fall? So, point. The point of the FUTA numbers, the federal unemployment tax revenue, indicates that the recovery is a myth. Right? We have some evidence. Good evidence. Huh? Oh, what are you going to do about it? I don't know. It's one of these things where you sit back and say, look, they're lying to me. We know they're lying. They're concealing the truth from you and me and everybody else in this country. They're hoping that if they conceal the truth long enough, we will go along with the program and on mere confidence, we will rise up out of the Great Recession. All we need to do is think happy thoughts. And we're all going to be prosperous. No, maybe not. Maybe there's more to it than thinking happy thoughts. Maybe we actually have to get out and produce something. Maybe what we really need are real jobs, not government jobs, real jobs where we are productive. And then as we produce more items and cars and homes and whatever, when we have a bigger pie to divide among us, we each got a bigger piece of the pie. Maybe we have a better life under those circumstances, but under the evidence we see from the federal unemployment tax, we're not headed in a good direction, and the people that tell you otherwise are either ignorant or lying.
Well, here's some truth to why this economy isn't recovering. We have debt to reach its highest level since 1950. The national debt this year is going to jump to the highest level since 1950 relative to the size of the economy, the Congressional Budget Office has reported today. The agency projected that the debt held by the public will rise 3 percentage points to 77% of U.S. gross domestic product by the end of fiscal year of 2016 in September. This debt has not hit that ratio since 1950, when the government was still in the middle of paying down the debt it incurred paying for World War II. So over the next 10 years, the office sees the debt rising from 77% to 86%. Beyond that, it's supposed to keep rising as interest costs on debt mount along with payments for Social Security, Medicare, and other mandatory programs. Do you think it'll even get to 86%, or is it going to collapse before we get there? But the debt held by the public includes on the debt issued in the form of treasury securities that are held by investors and not the debt the government owes itself to the Social Security Medicare Trust Fund. So, interesting.
This is just more evidence you need to pay attention to the difference between money and currency. And just because it spends doesn't mean it's money. And the only thing that's really going to protect you, if protection is possible in the event of a real crash, a serious recession, or even a depression, what's going to protect you? It's not likely to be digits. It's not likely to be paper. What it will be, you can count on that gold and that silver. And these are the fundamentals we were talking about earlier in the program. We're just seeing, these problems. We see these problems coming. All right, what do we need? You're on a ship. The ship looks, it's pretty good evidence that the ship is going to sink. Do you need a life preserver, or do you need a new copy of the National Observer? Where are you? Are you caught in inquiring minds want to know? Is that your mode? Or are you in a position where you're going to try to prepare for a difficult situation? If you think they're likely to have a difficult situation, then it's incumbent on you to prepare. Get yourself a life preserver. Get some gold. Get some silver. The currency is not going to make it through whatever trouble is headed our way. It's got to go because the debt is too great to be repaid. And one way or another, that reality is going to be faced, and it can only be dealt with by canceling the debt denominated in dollars or by causing massive inflation, which reduces the value of the dollars. You're holding dollars in your pocket, they're going to be worth a dime compared to what they are today. So get gold, get silver. That's the point. Yes, Melody?
Do you want me to give my 800 number? 800-375-4188.
You're going to have to give it several times because we've got about a minute to go, Melody.
And we get
many times? Let's have a contest and see. How many times can you say 1-800?
I can say it a lot. And, I have customers 20-plus years. I love it. I think of your number. I'm laying in bed going to the bank, and I think of 1-800-375-4188. So we have lots of clients, and we appreciate them all. And we always like new ones, so give us a call. We have that great little package going today at $1,040, a half-ounce American Gold Eagle coin, and 90% silver, quarters, and dimes. Total package $1,040. It includes all your shipping and insurance costs. So
Don't delay.
Close enough.
All right, folks, we're out of time. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back tomorrow and hope you tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.